So it's funny, you know, I look at my path that it unfolded the way it did for a reason, because I probably would have ran had it been introduced to me any earlier. But anyway, so I grew up down in a beautiful country, and, you know, I would run by streams outside, and two loving, now I see them as loving, parents, and two older sisters and a younger brother. And there was a split between us, so it was my older sisters and then me and my little brother. And I always felt very alone and happiest in nature and happiest with animals. And I developed these very unhealthy bonds with my animals. And I would, like, adopt random animals and bring them in. And really, I would say that was my first experience with God, loving my little critters that I would adopt. And I went to CCD, and my older sisters had gone to Catholic school. But when we moved to Jersey, my parents put my brother and I in public. And, you know, I would go to CCD when it didn't interfere with sports. And I remember just kind of liking the candy that I'd get when we would answer the worksheet wrong. Like, had no connection, no understanding of what was up there. Really, it was, you know, when my animals would get sick, I would kind of say what I had heard on TV, you know, like, please, God, don't take them. I love that animal. And so that relationship with a higher power kind of morphed in middle school. I'm going to paint a picture for you. I was this tall and like 80 pounds and, you know, couldn't see, huge glasses, and I was teased a lot and super awkward, but I was really fast, and which made the boys love me even more when I would beat them in gym class. Loved me. You know, in that awkward time, I started to depend on sports a lot. And because of my speed and whatever, I was put in accelerated training programs for a couple of different sports. So I would go from school to training, and I'd get home and crash at 10 o'clock at night. And my goal, my whole identity became wrapped up in this idea that I'm going to be an Olympic athlete. And it's all I thought about. So when I would pray, I would say, you know, God, help me do well in this game. Help me, you know, help the right scout come and all of this stuff. And it was field hockey and lacrosse. So I don't know what I was thinking there, that I was going to make all kinds of money being sponsored for field hockey or lacrosse. I wasn't like, should have put me in golf. But anyway, so, you know, playing all these sports, crazy, feeling really alone, and feeling really awkward. And, you know, girls, as they can be, super mean, so feeling even worse. But again, I wasn't introduced to anything at that time. I was really sheltered. And I got into a high school, and I was young in high school, so I was 13, and made things less awkward. It's like 15-year-old girls. But so, you know, I'm not invited to anything, any kind of parties where I'm introduced to it. And my junior year, things shifted, and I started to get invited to parties, and I started to feel more comfortable, get a little more confidence. And the first party I went to was at my girlfriend's house, and I remember having beer. And I was so afraid to have it because I was like this goody two-shoes who was really afraid. Like, I wrote my sisters at college, don't drink, it kills brain cells, you guys are going to die. And, you know, I was very dramatic with it. So I remember holding it and looking around and seeing how everyone else was so comfortable and cool and being like, I just want to fit in. I just want to be cool and not the weird girl who, with the dogs. And it's funny because now I bet that's what a lot of Facebook people call me, the weird girl with the dogs. But anyway, so I had my first beer and immediately loved that effect, right? Like, got warm, felt a little giddy. Everything wasn't so serious. And I don't remember much after that, but I think I had like one or two more. And my best friend dunked my head in the sink. Because I guess it was being, you know, so out of control. And she said, I don't know what's happening to you, but you should never drink again. Talk about an allergy, an abnormal reaction the very first time. And I remember not wanting to stop, right? Like, as I'm getting really, really sick, I'm thinking, what am I going to tell my parents so they let me hang out with Maureen again, right? And I come up with this, I have Lyme's disease. Right? That's what's going on. So my parents come pick me up, and I, like, make a mark on my stomach. And I, you know, I lived in the Pine Barrens, so I'm like, it's the Lyme. I got the Lyme, Mom. Funny story. they found out it wasn't the limes, and Maureen and I were in quite a bit of trouble. But I still loved it. I was like, man, that was so much fun. That was the best time I ever had. And so I started to hang out with, like, the band kids, right, the second string on my sports teams. And my relationship with God went from being like this to, like, help me do well to non-existent, right? Not there. And everything I had worked for, everything, like, I wanted, I knew the school I wanted to play at because, it knew the Olympic coach, and I'm like, I'm going there. And the scout comes, and I'm hungover, and I don't even care. And I start smoking cigarettes, affecting my performance. I'm not going to training on the weekends. And that's how much I loved alcohol, that the sports, which I made my whole world like that, I was like, and I found something that makes me feel better. And regardless of the consequences, I need it to feel okay. And I love reading. You could just leave it at that. I do love reading. And you guys actually have one of my favorite books, A New Pair of Glasses. Reading different people's experiences with what they gave up was crucial for me to accept that I have this, at a young age, because I wanted to exclude myself and say, I never had a DUI and I never had this, right? And I have all these reasons I wanted to say, I'm not alcoholic, I'm just a party girl. And when I would read other people's experiences, like when I first got the book, I read the back and I tried to find every young female and the feelings, I identified with the feelings, like they felt hopeless, they felt alone, the alcohol was their solution. So I give up all my dreams, end up going to college anyway, to play sports, and the first day I'm there, they say, we're doing something different this year, we're going to have a dry season. And I look at my teammate, I'm like, what is a dry season? And she said, oh, we don't drink all season, right? And it was like, I couldn't even breathe. So when, I work with girls who have anxiety, I can remember that moment and feeling like, oh my God, the weight of the world is on my shoulders. And it's a similar feeling I felt when I felt like I understood the first step for the first time, like, oh my God, I'm going to die. And you know what, then my only solution was I'm just going to drink anyway. And thank God, when I learned about the first step in a big book study, it went right into, and we have a solution that you can choose. But so college was a hot mess. And honestly, I did. I had fun, but it was so painful when I wasn't drinking. I had to drink so much to forget being an idiot the night before. And I knew there was a problem because I hung out with partiers. I actually transferred 3 times to find the partiers. And every time I was like, well, you guys just don't party and you're a Catholic school. So I'm going to go to a state school and then I'm going to go try and be a sorority girl. And anywhere I went, no one partied like I did. Except for this girl, Megan, who I met at Nova, and she was my recruit, and she ended up coming there the following year because she had so much fun with me. And I loved Megan because Megan drank how I drank, right? We'd all go out and party. We'd even go to AC sometimes and then come back, and they would all go to bed. And Megan and I would be the ones like, are you kidding? It's only 3:00. Where are we going to go? Right? Like, as soon as I got alcohol in me, that allergy kicked off, that craving, I need more. And my friend Chris B. Talks about, and I think he might actually be quoting someone else, but how with alcoholics, we get a couple drinks in us, and it's like, give us the keys, let's go, like, game on. And how, like, other people, they have too many, and they're like, whoa, let's sit down. Something that was imported out to me, that was pointed out to me, that was so important that actually Sarah told me, was that every time I drank, I thought the only way I could be alcoholic is if I lost complete control every single time I drank. So for a while, I held on to my sister's wedding because I was screamed at for 8 months. You cannot drink at her wedding. You cannot ruin her wedding, blah, 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 right? So, like, I did a pretty good job at not getting hammered at her wedding while the wedding was going on. And I hung on to that, like, well, an alcoholic couldn't have done that, right, when I heard the first step, because I had some control there. And it was explained to me, like, You might be able to think of a few times, but was that easy for you? How was that? Because a non-alcoholic, they don't go through that. And that made a tremendous amount of sense to me. Again, because I was like, how can I be alcoholic? You know, this good family and all this stuff. But so anyway, Megan drank how I drank. Meaning that we both had the allergy, right? And as soon as we started drinking, we couldn't stop. And we both had the mental obsession. So we'd be at practice the next day, dry heaving, saying, we're never going to drink again, right? We're never going to drink again. But then that mental obsession. Everyone else is just drinking a little, right? I don't want to get hammered. I never wanted to drink to the point where I got sick. But every time I did, every single time, because I started drinking with the intention, I just want to drink like a normal person. I just want to drink like my sister, who's a party girl who'll go on like booze cruises and have so much fun. And I thought, that's just what I want. I just want to have a couple. And every time I would get like one or two days, that would take me out again. So that, blew my mind when I heard it, when I first heard it explained that way, the mental obsession with wanting to beat the game. So Megan and I both had this. And like I said, I transferred a bunch, and I'm going to jump ahead because it's a neat story. 3 or 4 years into my sobriety, I get a Facebook inbox from this girl who says, I know we haven't spoken in forever, but, you know, are you in recovery? And I thought that's interesting for Megan, the booze hound, right? Because I'm still, like, better than Megan and not as bad as Megan. And so I write back to her, like, why would, you know, how, yeah. And she said that at one of our alumni games, my coach said, girls, you'll never believe who doesn't drink now. Kelly, she reached out to me. She owned up to everything she did while she was at the school. So Megan said it sounded to me like you had made an amends to her. So Megan and I connect, and Megan is just going to meetings. And, you know, we're the same age, and she's like, I have no fun. I don't know what to do. I'm just going to a couple meetings a day. And I said, I'll drive up, and we'll meet, and I'll show you what I just learned this summer at a big book study. And so it was just really neat introducing her to going through the work out of the book and having an experience one-on-one with someone who, you know, walks your hand through that and then puts your hand in God. And Megan and I developed this friendship where we went to a retreat together, up at the Wilson House, and we got to speak together because a woman there overheard us. And Megan just saw me get married in November, which is amazing because getting married is one of the things I thought was going to keep me out of the rooms, because I thought, how do you get married sober? Like, you have champagne, you have wine. Like, that's the day I can get hammered. And it's an open bar. And, you know, I had all these reasons that were huge to me. Like, I cannot never drink again. And you know what? I didn't even think about it. Like, I had the caterers put cider on my side and all my AA friends' sides. And I didn't feel like I was missing a thing. I actually felt so blessed because, you know, a year before that, my sister had her wedding and remembers half of it because of drinking. And just a neat little story there, side story. So coming back, hot mess in college. I have no idea what I want to do. I come home from college and someone says, you should be a guidance counselor, right? Because obviously I have so much to offer children. And so I go to grad school. I move home, and I didn't want to drink. I really didn't. But my brother worked at a bar, and he had every alcohol known to man, right? And he had his room lined in it. And I thought it was so beautiful. Like, oh, look at that. Because I had only seen, like, Carlo Rossi and Mad Dog. And I love my brother, and I never was a thief. And man, I slowly went through every single bottle, replacing it with water, even to where I did his little airplane bottles in the drawers. And my brother's this big football player, and I remember he came home from school, and looked like he was going to cry. I've never seen my brother cry. And he had a little flask of Mad Dog, and said, you know, you're really, really sick, and we need to tell Mom and Dad, but I know you need this, and I don't know what to do, right? And I'm so selfish, so selfish. I'm like, thanks, take it, shut the door, right? Like, thanks, but no thanks, and because I do need it. I don't think I can live without it. And so I start this routine of, you know, hiding it under my bed and so paranoid. Towards the end of my addiction, so wildly paranoid. And I'm like, turn it on the radio and pouring it into a water bottle so that I can have it by the computer and chase it with my soda and my parents will never know. And I keep saying, I'm just a party girl, right? I'm a party girl living home with my parents who's like whooping it up alone every night. And I developed this horrible addiction to my ADD medication that, you know, was consuming my addiction, right? And I'm very, very sick with food and exercise, and I would lay in bed at night, and I would list everything, and I'd be like, God, please, like, just help me be normal. I just want to be normal. Like, help me, you know, quit smoking, because that was a big deal. My grandfather died of emphysema, and I'm hiding it and covering it up, and I just want to stop drinking, and I'm listing all this, and God, if you could just take one. And so I start to take my relationship with God when I feel it, you know, with my animals too, to getting like, okay, I get you. You have some kind of power. And I would like watch When a Man Loves a Woman in 28 days. And I'm like, oh, okay, I got to pet horses. So I'm like petting my dog thinking I'm going to get better. And in so much pain, and I start to deepen my prayers. Help me, right? Just simpler, but deeper. Help me. And my ears start to perk up in classes where I'm learning about how to counsel a teenager who has substance abuse problems. And I'm seeing, like, you know, what it looks like to have this disease, and I am terrified. And but I'm seeing it from a textbook, so I'm thinking alcohol's the problem, right? Alcohol's the problem, not self, alcohol. So I decide I'm going to stop drinking. That was the hardest 6 months of my life. I leaned on all those other areas that, you know, I was reaching out for a solution and didn't drink. And then actually met someone. I thought, I just need to meet someone and everything will be fine, right? It'll be fine. I'll get cured. And so I meet someone and they're in AA because I clicked on my little online box, I don't drink. And they clicked, I don't drink. And he said, do you go to meetings? And I was like, board meetings? I'm in school. And he said, no, AA meetings. And I said, no, I don't need that. I haven't drank in a few months, right? And meanwhile, I am a lunatic. And so anyway, you know, we start dating, and I'm living at home, so, like, I can go there and kind of show him this I'm perfect, right, side. And we do a Sober Shore house. Has anyone heard of these things, Sober Shore houses? So I grew up going to the Jersey Shore, and it's a bunch of sober people who still want to have fun at the shore without it being, you know, debauchery. So it's me and like 18 of these hardcore like AAs from the mainline area and then one other guy who drinks, who knew someone, but who drinks like a normal person, whatever that is. And so we're in the shore house and man, these girls, the women were on to me like that. And go to him and they're like, something's up with your girl, like she's really sick, something's going on. Do you know how much that hurt my ego? Because I'm like, I'm not even drinking, and you think I'm crazy? And then they just saw my sadness, and I would go on walks with these girls, and they would talk about their relationship with God and talk about when they would have hangovers. And, you know, they didn't pull me, though. They didn't connect it. Like, you're really sick. You don't find God. You're going to die. And I would have ran. I would have ran from the shore house. But, you know, they were kind of introducing it, 12-stepping me very gently. And so I can't take it anymore. So one night, the one guy who drank has like a 12-pack of beer. And I decide I'm going to drink out of nowhere, right? And when I read, you know, in our literature more about alcoholism, how like these stories of other alcoholics who it comes out of nowhere. And I knew, like I had been in grad school, I understood what it looked like. That, you know, I probably have this disease and that I shouldn't be drinking. I knew that with every fiber of my being. And I just thought, I don't care. Like, you know what? It'll be fine. This time will be different. And so I had one beer. And as soon as I had that beer, I was halfway done. And I was like, right, I got to get more. So I go to the kitchen and I say, okay, I'm getting my second. Look at me. It's been a half hour. Like wishing the guy would drink faster so it wasn't obvious how fast I drank. And I hide behind the refrigerator door, and I chug my second, and then I chug my third, and I walk out with my fourth, and I pretend it's my second. And there began my deception, my lies. And And, you know, it was just so hard trying to be normal that night, I remember, because, like, the wheels were off, and I just wanted to drink again. And it, imagine, right, 12 other AAs, and we're all out, and they see this unraveling. Like, I can only imagine what they were saying at the 7 o'clock a.m. morning meeting the next day. Like, boy, what did we just see? So I'm out there for 2 weeks, and I'm in so much pain, and I like just reek, and the girls are coming in, and they're like, no, honey, it's you got to get up. And I'm like, what time is it? Get out of my face. And they're like, it's 6 o'clock in the evening. And, you know, so my progression just kicked off so fast. And any thought that I could drink like a normal person was quickly swept away. But I wasn't ready for a solution. I didn't want what they have. You know, I saw how they get up at like 7 in the morning and read and have their coffee and iron their khakis. And I was like, who are you people who are so happy? And I just wanted to die. I really did. I was like, I want to be in a cabin with a bunch of Mad Dog and a pack of cigarettes and leave me the heck alone. That's all I wanted. And to me, like, that would have made me very, very happy at the moment. You know, they reached out to me and they said, we have a solution. And one of them read the doctor's opinion. And I had no idea what they were talking about. But they said, the guy said, you know, I really care about you. And I'm very sorry I didn't see this. But I can, you know, get you to a woman. You really need help. I can't pretend that nothing's wrong. And so I was like, peace out, never liked you anyway. And break this guy's heart and just leave and create a mess and go home. And my moment of clarity came not long after that. I'm laying in bed at my parents' house, and I felt my heart rate slow down. I don't know if anybody's ever felt that. Combination of what I was doing with the alcohol and my medication. And it felt like it was just clenching, and my hands got really clammy, and I couldn't really feel my left side, and I thought, I'm going to die. I'm just going to die. And in walks my mom, and I do. I love my parents, but my mom's very up in your business. So, you know, I would have these nightmares of, like, just wanting to push her away, and she came in the room and said, you know, how can I help you? What can we do? And I screamed. I was like, get out of my face. I just want to drink. Leave me alone, right? And I pushed my mom away physically. And time slowed down, you know? And it was the weirdest thing that has never happened to me before, and it hasn't happened since. But I literally saw it in slow motion, the pain that I was causing her on her face. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to die. I might as well give this a shot, right? Death or trying this AA thing. And they seem happy. I go there and I say, and I tell this guy, you know, I think I'm alcoholic. And he says, we have a solution. And it felt so good to say it that, like, I just started, like, spewing all of my secrets. It was like secrets on Saturday. And it was, like, crazy. And I'm like, you know, and I'm pretty sure I have a severe eating disorder, and I'm addicted to my ADD medication, and I smoke. And he's like, we've been going out a year. And that's how good I was at keeping all of this stuff inside, and it was killing me. I have tried to get into a drug and alcohol rehab, and I was told at my first meeting, be honest. You know, be honest. From here on out, be honest. And at that meeting, a woman came up to me. All the women came over after I introduced I was new and reached out and gave me their numbers. And one woman took my number. And I was like, no. And she called the next day, and she was like, I'm Wendy. I'd like to be your temporary sponsor. And you're going to be honest from now on. And, you know, really, like, took my hand. And I needed that. And she was so loving and so sweet to me. And we would meet at her house and drink tea and walk through the book. And I think I was her first sponsee, actually. And she had like seven years, but she just had an experience with the work. And was like on fire and was taking me through. And I'm honest in my intake interview. And I don't qualify for drug and alcohol treatment. They say that because of my behaviors with food and exercise, I have to go take care of that first. And I share that up here because I know a lot of us suffer with so many things in AA, right? And we think alcohol is the problem, and the gambling and food, and we got a lot going on. And I've just found that when I let God into all those areas and apply my recovery to so much more than just I didn't drink today. You know, I apply it to, like, how am I treating others? Am I nourishing my body, my mind? Am I taking care of myself the way God would want me to so that I can best help other women? You know, it's a miracle that I feel so relieved of all of that pain with everything. So I go to treatment. I get into work right away. And I did a ton of fellowship. I took off. I took a year off from grad school, and I went to a ton of meetings, and I did coffee, and I loved seeing people I knew, and really, it was such a beautiful first year, because I felt like, wow, these are what friends are. And I mean, I was a Looney Tunes. I think all I shared about was how much I loved my bed, because I had never gone to bed without it spinning. And so, like, every day I'd be like, oh my God, have you guys gone to bed lately? Like, it's amazing. I got new sheets. And, like, I can't believe people even let me talk. But I was so happy. I took to AA so quickly, loved it. And you know, pretty early on was told, like, we don't come at each other from the spiritual mountaintop, and you know best. So I was mindful of that, because all my friends were partiers, but they, you know, most of them hard drinkers, not alcoholic. But I want to be there for one day when, or if they do need help and they want to be attracted to this and not have me shoving it down their throat all the time. So anyway, I'm really enjoying AA, and changed a lot. You know, we change a ton, and I have this experience with the work. And me and that man realized we were much better off as friends. And you called off a wedding and, you know, moved down the shore to save money at my living out of my parents' shore house. And, like, it was okay. You know, if that would have happened to me 5 years before that, I would have died. Like, this guy would have been my whole world. And, you know, sure, I was really upset. But, you know, the fact that we could call off a wedding and damage not be done to each other, you know, cruel words not be spoken, it just be like, you know, God put us together for a reason, and what a beautiful experience that was, and then move forward. And the work has taught me with relationships, it's not about, you know, they're such a bad person. My most challenging relationship taught me the most, because it taught me, like, how can I continue to be the version of God that I think God wants me to be, right? And who am I most productive with, you know? And if I'm with someone who has certain characteristics, I'm not going to be as helpful as if I'm with someone where it's, like, peaceful and serene all the time. And instead of choosing that drama, you know, I can choose serenity. And it's just a beautiful gift to be able to go through that. And so I start being a guidance counselor, and I'm in a really tough school. You know, kids coming at me with scissors and scissors. It's a hard word. And it was so, it got me so. take away my ego, take away my vanity, take away all this. And you know, and I'm breaking it down, and that's what the literature says. Like, put it in your own words, and all of the thys and all of that. Like, I couldn't comprehend that, but I could reach for. I offer, you know, guide me, direct me, inspire me every time I met with a kid, and it was such a beautiful time of my life, that getting close to God, and I'm going for these long walks on the beach with my lunatic golden retriever, and I'm enjoying her, you know, to where I was so irritable. Like, oh, she's so annoying. She's got another horseshoe crab and she stole that dog's bone. I would just like, you know, everything was driving me crazy. To like seeing the beauty in her and seeing God in everything and God in the beauty of a dog having fun. And you know, I'm praying on my knees in the morning and at night, and I moved back to Pennsylvania and have a very interesting relationship. I didn't date a ton, and my first sponsor was very intense about that. And, you know, I see my role as a sponsor now to, like, I want to hold your hand through the work, but I'm not God, so I really don't try and tell my girls what to do. I try and have discussions about it. You know, what do you think? How do you think God would have you be? But honestly, you know, thank God she was firm on this, but she said, you know, AA is sacred. Be very mindful of how you treat people in there. You know, don't form relationships and then let them go. Don't date everybody you're attracted to. You know, this is where we'll die without AA. So, you know, she was very intense about it. But so, you know, I was really careful. I didn't date a lot. I had two relationships in sobriety until I met my husband. And the one taught me so much, because it caused a lot of pain and it caused a lot of fear. And it gave me who I refer to as Natasha, which is, have you ever hated someone so much you felt it in your stomach, like a resentment? And I felt it. And I'd be like driving, and be like, "Oh my God!" And I couldn't explain it any other way than like the alien baby, and I knew I was going to die if I didn't get rid of it. So I'm going to this book study, and I'm praying, you know, God, bring a woman into my life where I can have an experience with the work one on one. And I meet this woman, and we go through, and having had the studying the literature combined with meeting her one on one every week. That's where it was like, whoa, you know, like I had this amazing experience and learned how to do inventory and see my side of the street and saw like the pain I was causing and how I can focus on how I can be, you know, more of a woman of God and help more people. And so, you know, that relationship, I'm so grateful for it. And Tasha went away, you know, and I made amends, and I love now being able to go places and not fear running into people. When I first got sober, I got sober around where I went to my first college, and I remember I'd be like, oh my God, I don't want to run into anybody, right? Like my coach, I was so afraid, and to now it's like by this way of living, you know, it's we don't have to fear anything, and. What I use a lot is, I think it's on 62 in the third step when it talks about how you can view your higher power, right? And we can all choose our own conception of God. I didn't have my first sponsor was Jewish. My second one was extremely Christian, and it was like this hippie. It was like, oh, I think I'm Buddhist. Like, I had no idea. So their conception of God wasn't going to work for me. But what we talked about is, okay, there's three ways you want to view that, you know, your role with God. God is this loving parent. Like, how do you want your parent to be? You can choose now. You don't have to have, like, a screamer from the sidelines. Pastor! Like, no, my God today isn't like that. You know, my God unconditionally loves me. And how I, you know, called my dad when I bought my home and the heater was exploding. I'm like, Dad, my God. Now it's like I go to God that way. You know, like I take a moment, I'm still, and like, God help me. You know, remove my anger. Fill me with serenity. Help me think of others. And so that transition. And then that God is running the Kelly show. I found that when I try and push things to make them work, it normally doesn't end well. There's always a good lesson learned. But it doesn't end well. And so I found that, you know, have faith. And if I truly believe that God can restore me to sanity, then I never need to worry. And, you know, at the final part, I'm working for God. So anytime I work with kids or work with a girl, how would God have me be? And, you know, with the worry and the fear part, I'm crazy about my mom. And my mom got really sick and got cancer a year and a half ago. And really thought I was going to lose her. And I remember, you know, we heard people meetings be like, and you can get through anything. And I was like, hey, nobody can get through losing their mama. Like, come on. And I'm there, and I'm at, you know, and I'm next to her hospital bed, and it wasn't about me, you know, and I'm watching my siblings, and everyone deals with grief their own way, but I knew, like, I can't go through this selfishly, or I'm going to die, or I'm going to kill somebody, probably my sisters. And so, you know, I'm there for my mom. Like, how can I be helpful to my mom? And praying with her, and, you know, spent beautiful days in the hospital with her, and just, you know, being calm and like, that is not me. That's all because I had a relationship with God and I am working 6 and 7. You know, every time it's like the doctor comes in and we got to take the kidney and I'm like, you know, paralyzed by fear. Like, I don't have time for that. You know, you don't have time for fear if you're living in a world where you want to serve God's purpose and to be helpful to others. So I'm praying through it. My mom's fine now down in Florida. But, you know, all these experiences in sobriety, like, had I not put the drink down and reached for power, you know, when I realized I'm powerless over alcohol, I can't drink like a normal person, it's the only thing that makes me feel better, I just want to die, and instead reach for the power that is my relationship with God, like, you know, it's a miracle. And these practices, like, I like to think I have a bunch of spiritual teachers, and, you know, and my sponsor, and then this team of women who I call my 10-step team, where when we, the book says, watch, ask, turn, right? Watch for fear, resentment, worry. Ask God to remove it. Turn your thoughts to others. And we do that together. And we're this little group of girls, and we'll shoot a text like, hey, do you have time for a quick 10-step? And I love these women so much because even though we really care about each other and we're girlfriends, we also know that if we don't tell each other the truth, we're going to die. And we're going to go up in our head, right, the problem that created this, and try and solve it on our own. So, you know, we live in the 10th step. And when I'm wrong, they point it out. No. But when I'm wrong, you know, I try and rectify it as quickly as I can without hurting more people. And I love my relationship with God so much, that 11th step. When we moved, after I got married in November, we moved right away, and it was really chaotic, and, you know, with boxes everywhere, and the first thing I did is set up my space. And I'm not saying, you know, anyone needs a space to connect with God, but for me, I wanted a little safe space where the dogs would leave me alone, and I have a little candle, you know, and I love buying incense for it, and I have my routine in the morning, and it's such a beautiful time that if you haven't given yourself time to set aside a couple minutes in the morning to do that, to connect, man, I just found like my sobriety was transformed when I did. And I would do it in the car, you know, I would think, or in the shower. And then my friend Chris B., one of my teachers, said, you know, how would your best friend feel if you called her and you're like, I got a second, I'm in the shower. Like, she'd be like, are you kidding? You can't make time for me? That made a lot of sense to me. And with working with others, I like visual images. And, you know, I love the image of, you know, we're on this path. And before I got sober, it was this dark path and, like, scraggly trees, right? And just dark, and I was all alone and, like, beady eyes in the woods. And now, you know, as I got sober, it was like, you know, meetings come on to it and spiritual literature and doing the steps and, like, you know, seeing the transformation that my path today has, that even when really scary things happen, I don't have to run all the way back there. You know, I can keep moving forward and reach for the tools I know work, you know, God helping others and how beautiful that is. And with working with others, you know, I've gone both ways. Like, when I first got sober, I followed that rule, don't sponsor anyone else. And it just felt like I was so greedy. I was taking. And wasn't wasn't giving how I could have at that time, right? What I had to offer is, you know, more car rides, and I could have been more attuned to people who seemed like they needed to talk, whatever I could offer at that time. So it was just this inflow, you know, and I wasn't feeling good, to when I caught on fire with the work, and I was sponsoring everybody to the point where, you know, what I felt is that I was damaging girls, because I'm working a full-time job, I'm working a part-time job after that, and you know, I'm sponsoring like 12, 15 girls. Some people can do that, and I think that, you know, the 12 and 12 talks about that. Some people are meant to do this, they can do it at that level, and I was beating myself up, because I was like, I'm losing my mind, like, why can't I sponsor how I'm seeing these other people, you know, take on this many activities and serving this many positions, and I wasn't being effective. But I was told, don't you make the decision, you know, like it's not the Kelly show. And so I started to pray in the morning, God, direct my show, please make it really clear, like, help me be effective. And so I switched my wording, you know, like, help me be effective. And one by one, it was like my life became so serene, you know, like I sponsor girls, and there are these beautiful relationships that I enjoy, that I'm like, oh my God, I got another one coming in 15 minutes. Like, who am I? Who do I think I am? And, you know, and I love meeting with my sponsor, and I love my home group. You know, I serve a position there, and I think commitments in AA are so important. But also, my life outside AA, I live so that if there was, like, secret AA police watching, I wouldn't get in trouble. You know, like, I am very mindful of being honest when I feel resentment. You know, God save me from being angry. This is a sick person, because I believe we're all God's children, and we're here to help each other, not hurt each other. And so, you know, not to say that I balance my life. Every day I say, God, you know, guide me with what you want me to do. But, today I am so happy. I'm so, so happy. I'm in that, like, annoying newlywedded bliss thing where, it's just, I never thought I could be this happy. And so I am, I'm being very mindful of, you know, this relationship isn't my higher power, you know, because some relationships are meant for a brief period of time. And you know, my sobriety isn't contingent on that. And yeah, how I feel in the morning sometimes is, you know, affected. If things are amazing, I'm happier like any normal human. But I try to be very mindful of, you know, who is my higher power. And what I have control over and what I don't, and just the prayers in the book. You know, my favorite line in the book, we have recovered and have been given the power to help others, is kind of like my little mantra. You know, like, how can I stay in that place where I feel like, you know, yes, there's no cure and I'm going to die an alcoholic, but I can live a recovered life. I can feel sane. You know, I can reach for God when I don't feel sane. And what a beautiful gift that is, and that we get to share it with each other. So thank you for letting me share with you guys tonight.